welcome to the How To Dressage podcast, and in this episode we're going to look at how to be a great dressage rider. Now, dressage riding is a complex process that requires effort, hard work, commitment, discipline and dedication on the part of the rider. So in this in-depth podcast, we're going to drill down what can turn an average dressage rider into one of the greats. So firstly, we're going to share with you 11 qualities of a great dressage rider. So quality number one is to communicate clearly. Now, clear communication between a horse and rider is crucial in dressage. Harmony is a vital element of your partnership with your horse, and that's included in the collective mark on all dressage sheets through the levels. Now, good harmony is only achievable when clear communication between horse and rider is established. Because if the horse doesn't understand what you want of him, he won't be able to work with you. Quality number two is to understand each horse. Because every horse is different. The top dressage riders have an uncanny ability to get on board any horse in the yard and produce good work, regardless of whether they have ridden that horse before. Now, learning to understand an individual horse's quirks and personality are part of the challenge of dressage riding, and great dressage riders are able to do that consistently, sympathetically, and successfully. So quality number three is to gain riding experience at every opportunity. Because great dressage riders aren't just born that way. The most successful and talented riders spend a lot of time in the saddle. Now, that time can be spent having coaching, practicing the movements that they find the most challenging, or schooling their horses along the scales of training to build a firm foundation for the more advanced work that is yet to come. And quality number four is to dedicate yourself to knowledge and improvement. Now, this quality can be applied to pretty much any sport or art, but it is certainly true of dressage, because great dressage riders are humble enough to admit that they still have much to learn. They're also curious, never missing an opportunity to learn from their peers. You must also have the attitude that good is never good enough, and aim to make your good excellent. And great dressage riders and other sportsmen are committed to improvement, and they take whatever action is required to achieve that. Quality number five is to cultivate mental well-being. Because competing at the higher dressage levels is stressful and can be a source of anxiety and tension. And great dressage riders are ice kings and queens, seemingly able to absorb and thrive on the pressure that comes with competing at the very highest levels. All the top dressage riders have developed a mechanism that enables them to cope with the stress of competition. Now, what works will vary between individuals, and some riders like to socialise, chat and joke with friends, where others prefer to remove themselves, get focused and chill out. It's really just a matter of personal preference and finding out what works best for you. Quality number six is to appreciate what you have. Now, every rider loves what they do, no matter what discipline they compete in. And it's essential for professional dressage riders and for amateurs who aspire to be one of the greats. Because dressage riding requires tremendous amount of dedication. And if you don't consider yourself incredibly lucky to be able to school and compete your horse, then you'll never have the motivation that you need to succeed. Quality number seven is to love and respect your horses. Now, dressage riding requires so much emotional commitment and discipline that sometimes the horse can finish up being regarded as a machine by riders whose determination to succeed overrides their love and respect for their equine partner. Now, loving and respecting horses as magnificent, empathetic animals is what brings most riders into working and living with horses in the first place, and this is a crucial thing to remember. Quality number eight is to be insightful, because great dressage riders are masters at spotting small details that may be impeding their horse's development or their own riding. So learn to be more insightful so that you can find the key to your horse's and your own performance. Quality number eight is to spend time with your horse out of the arena. Now, although you might be prepared to spend every waking hour in the dressage arena schooling your horse, your equine partner will appreciate some downtime and a change of routine. Now, a work-life balance is just as important for your horse as it is for you, because horses that are overschooled can become stale and resentful. So give your horse a change of scenery by taking him on trail rides, schooling over a few poles, or lunging. Quality number 10 is to pay attention to detail. Because great riders are masters at paying attention to detail, you must be picky and detail-orientated when it comes to schooling your horse, and pay attention to every single stride, recognise problems and areas that could be improved, and take action to address issues before they become ingrained. Now, within your schooling systems, be sure to build flexibility so that you can adjust your methods as required. And lastly, quality number 11, be honest to your own failings. So don't always blame your horse for getting it wrong. Look at yourself first. Because when things go wrong, great dressage riders look first at themselves and their riding. And 99% of the time, the fault is with the pilot, not the horse. So you must be big enough to accept that you got it wrong and take whatever action is required to correct your error without punishing your horse for your failings. So now let's move on to discuss the essential mechanics of a great dressage rider. So number one is the rider's balance and seat. Because great dressage riders pay close attention to their seat and balance. And to be a great dressage rider, you must sit straight and be supple and balanced in the saddle. If your balance is not good, you will negatively affect your horse. So you must be able to sit squarely in the centre of the saddle with an independent seat that doesn't rely on the reins for balance. Now, a well-balanced rider can ride one hand, they can allow a long rein so that the horse can stretch, and they can also offer a reassuring pat when necessary. Now, if you're not balanced in the saddle, you won't be able to do any of those things, and that will limit your ability to work effectively and in harmony with your horse. Now, although there is just one collective mark for the rider's position, that mark also covers the effect of the aids. Now, if a rider is unbalanced, his influence over the horse's way of going will be negative, and good judges will recognise and penalise that rider accordingly. Now, great riders always have lessons that are solely geared towards improving their position and suppleness. However, most leisure riders can't afford the time or justify the cost of having a lesson every day. So here are a few simple ways of improving your suppleness and balance whilst in the saddle. So number one is to ride with shorter stirrups in a jumping saddle from time to time. Number two is to ride without stirrups. Number three is to ride on varying terrain, including up and down hills. Number four is to ride in different saddles. And number five is to ride horses of different sizes and with different gaits. Now, if other riders in your barn or yard take part in different disciplines, then go with them. Try shortening your stirrups, galloping along trails, popping over hedges and ditches, and ride outside of your comfort zone. All of these exercises will give you more confidence, as well as improving your balance and suppleness in the saddle. Now, only when you are supple and balanced will you be able to follow your horse's movement in the extensions without restricting him or causing him to tighten through his back. And lessons on the lunge are a vital tool in improving your balance and suppleness, and even the top dressage riders spend time working on the lunge. So now let's move on to number two, which is establishing a correct connection with the horse. Now, the dressage horse is described by the FEI as a happy athlete. Now, a happy athlete should be willing in his work, and the partnership between horse and rider should always appear harmonious. Now, a great dressage rider will understand how to create and maintain the correct connection through the horse's back to the bridle. And experts are of the opinion that schooling a horse in this natural direction and developing the connection, or the bridge, between his hindquarters and his forehand will make for a happier and sounder horse. Now, the bottom line is that your horse will be more willing and you will have fewer vet bills if your horse works in a relaxed and correct connection. Now, if your horse is not accepting the bit, he will eventually suffer from pain in his back. Also, soundness problems can result from a horse being tense and tight in his joints and being forced to carry himself in a false frame or working too much on his forehand. Now, the correct connection comes from the horse being supple through his back. So moving on to number three, which is the use of artificial aids. Because great dressage riders do use some of the artificial aids that are available to them. And when used correctly, a whip and spurs can work to refine the rider's aids, enhancing and improving the horse's performance whilst in the dressage arena. So let's take a look at a dressage whip. So the standard length of a dressage whip measures to around 40 to 45 inches. Now the length of whip that you choose will depend to some extent on the size of your horse. For example, if you have a small, short coupled horse, a whip that's too long will only get in the way and you could accidentally catch your horse making him tense and disrupting his rhythm. Now you should not use the whip on the horse's back in an attempt to make the horse go forward. Using the whip in this way only serves to reinforce the tendency of the hind legs to go out behind the horse and he will most likely become irritated too. So the dressage whip can be used in three positions. So position number one is the shoulder. So you can tap the whip on the horse's shoulder. Now the shoulder is not as sensitive as the horse's hind end. Also, you don't need to worry too much about the timing of the tap you use. And you can use the whip on the horse's shoulder whenever you need to. So position number two is behind your leg. Now tapping the horse just behind your leg helps to reinforce your sideways and forwards leg aids. And finally, position number three is the horse's hind end. So when your horse is working forward from your driving aids, you can then use the whip on his hind end. Now when used correctly, this aid can encourage the horse to develop more cadence. However, the timing here is crucial, because you must use the whip only as the hind leg comes off the ground if this aid is to be effective and correct. Now it's also important to mention that the whip is only there to help the horse and the horse should not become afraid of it. So now let's move on to discuss spurs. Because many dressage riders at the lower levels regard spurs as some kind of fashion accessory rather than using them to enhance their aids. Now a horse that's ridden in spurs all the time can quickly become irritable and can even become dead to the spur. Now spurs are there to allow you to give a lighter aid and not as a means to persuade a lazy horse to liven up. Now when fitting your spurs, take care that they do not point upward. Also make sure that you don't need to lift your heel in order for the spur to come in contact with the horse's sides. Now number four is to ride transitions correctly. Now all dressage riders are able to ride transitions correctly and you should learn to do that too. Although riding transitions may seem like a simple routine thing, the ability to do so is essential if you are to become a top class rider. So you must pay attention to riding proper transitions every day. So ride your transitions from the leg and not by using your reins. And remember to ride smooth transitions within the gates and utilise the half halt to good effect. Now once the horse is accepting of your forward and slowing aids, you can begin to use your rein aids. And always give rein aids without closing the door on your horse. Now great dressage riders do not use their reins to pull their horse into an outline, to change direction or to ride downward transitions. Instead, when using the rein aids, great dressage riders understand the horse's natural flight instinct when he feels trapped. So when the horse begins to become tense and upset, the good dressage rider will ease their hand so that the horse feels that he has an escape route and he's not being confined to a closed hand. Now in the wild, a horse will only fight against an attacker for a second or so before running away. Now if you fight with your horse for a whole lesson without giving him a chance to escape, the horse will feel threatened and tension will result. So to achieve and maintain the harmony that you need for dressage, you must allow the horse to feel that he can leave if he wants to. Number five, the double bridle. Now using a double bridle should be regarded as a privilege and not as a right. And once a horse reaches advanced level, most dressage riders use the double bridle. Now, the double bridle should be used to make the horse lighter in the hand and to enhance his already established self-carriage. Now, you cannot use the double bridle to create self-carriage, because if you do that, you run the risk of shortening the horse's neck and stifling his forwardness, and you will damage the freedom and expression of his paces. Number 6 is reading your horse's body language. So earlier in this podcast, we discussed the importance of empathy and working in harmony with your horse. Now, another skill that is possessed by all the great dressage riders is the ability to read a horse's body language. The horse's body language will tell you how he's feeling during his work and afterwards. Now, reading equine body language is also a skill that good dressage judges possess. For example, if the horse has a swinging tail, floppy ears, and a calm expression on his face, the judge can instantly see that the horse is relaxed and happy in his work. Now, other signs are more subtle, and it's up to you to learn to interpret them. For example, if the horse immediately shortens his stride and drops behind the vertical when you begin working in walk, you should recognise that your horse is tense and unhappy about something. Then it's up to you to work out what that problem is and to fix it. Now, great dressage riders can pick up any signs of tension or discomfort from their horses, such as a swishing tail or an increased heart rate, when the new and difficult work is introduced. Now, of equal importance is the great rider's ability to understand the cause of the problem and having the knowledge to correct it. So this leads us into number 7, which is correcting mistakes. Now, how those mistakes are corrected by the rider can also have a big influence on the horse's body language. Now, the best dressage riders will always use their aids to make a positive correction that sympathetically puts the horse back on track. Now, if your correction confuses the horse, he will become tense and resentful. For example, if your horse jogs in the free walk and you punish him by flicking him with your whip, he won't understand the correction. Instead, quietly bring the horse back to walk, repeat the exercise, and praise him when he gets it right. The bottom line is that when you correct your horse for making a mistake, you must make what you want absolutely crystal clear. So moving on to number 8, bend and straightness. Now, good dressage riders have an understanding of the judges' comments on their dressage score sheets, and less experienced riders can often misinterpret some of the comments, which can lead to confusion for both horse and rider. Now, one area that is commonly misunderstood by amateur riders is that of straightness, suppleness to the bend, and flexion. Now, if this is you, then please search our podcast archive for the following 2 episodes. So, what is the difference between bend and flexion, and how to get your horse to bend? So, moving on to number 9, is do you need money to be a great dressage rider? Now, owning a horse is expensive, but do you need pots of money to be a great dressage rider? Now, not necessarily. Anyone can be a great dressage rider if they are prepared to do the work, put in the hours, and pay close attention to the correct schooling and development of their horse. Now, that said, most professional dressage riders who compete at the highest levels have sponsors behind them. And unless you can find someone to help you with expenses, it can be very difficult to compete successfully at the very highest levels. Now, in addition to the everyday running costs of livery, vet bills, insurance, etc., that you would incur for any horse, you'll need to find the cash to pay for expenses that are directly associated with the serious competing in dressage competitions, which include entry fees, registration costs for both horse and rider, transport, grooms, overnight stabling, clothing and equipment, and training. Now, when you compare the final bill for all of that, the prize money that's on offer at the vast majority of competitions appears trifling and certainly won't cover your outlay. Now, most professional dressage riders make the most of their money through training, product endorsements, bringing on and selling horses, and various forms of consultancy work. And lastly, number 10, horsepower. Now, the modern day dressage horse comes in all shapes and sizes. And in theory, as long as the horse has 3 correct regular paces and is correctly schooled, he should be able to perform a good dressage test. However, most dressage riders competing at the highest levels are mounted on big moving horses with price tags that match the size of their extravagant natural paces. But that said, you can still be a great dressage rider if you apply yourself diligently, strive to increase your knowledge base, and work hard, regardless of the horsepower that you have at your disposal. So to wrap this episode up, great dressage riders are the ones who do their homework. So when riding dressage, there are certain things, as discussed in this podcast, that you must do correctly. And doing them approximately or more or less correctly is not good enough. Now, great dressage riders take the time to recognise their faults and make the time to put them right. Now, there's no doubt that some riders are naturally gifted, but an average rider can still achieve greatness if they are prepared to apply themselves, pay attention to the points in this podcast, and school their horses correctly. Now, if you have any other questions when it comes to this podcast, or if you have any other tips and points that you would like to add, then please do leave us a comment at the bottom of the relevant blog post on our website. Alternatively, you can join our training forum, which you can find at howtodressage.com/community. And to make sure that you don't miss out on any of our other free stuff, training diaries, books and competitions, please don't forget to like and follow us on our other social media platforms, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, Twitter and Pinterest. We truly appreciate you tuning in today to listen to our podcast and hope that you got a lot from it. For more, don't forget to check out our articles and other free stuff available on our website howtodressage.com and pop by Amazon for our range of equestrian books, planners and diaries to help you stay on track with your competitions and training. Bye for now.